You're listening to a Mint podcast brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hi, I'm Shovik Das. I'm Leslie DeMonte.
And I'm Deepthi Ahuja. You're listening to Mint Etc.,
a podcast where we will talk about important developments in technology and how they will transform our lives, work, and play as we know it.
Welcome to Tech Cetera. This is your favorite technology podcast where each week we come up with a diverse range of things to discuss. And this week, the news cycle, at least in the world of technology, has been pretty interesting. If you follow Mint, earlier this week, we spoke about a very interesting thing that's been happening in the smartphone market. And the reason why we keep talking about the smartphone market and its businesses is because smartphones ubiquitously draw user attention, and irrespective of everything, if for the most part most people do find smartphones pretty interesting in terms of technology and how it impacts their lives. Now, Leslie, I'd like to sort of draw your attention to this, that I was speaking with a host of retailers and the smartphone brands in question. Of course, the brands would have something different to say for, well, obvious reasons, but the retailers have this thing to say that the demand for smartphones is pretty much organic demand for smartphones. You know, back in the day when people would be interested and they'd walk into a store to experience a device and they'd be interested in the technology and so on and so forth, that entire activity has sort of evaporated, which is why retailers have to try and find different strategies in order to interest buyers into coming into their stores. And the key issue here seems to be that the organic interest in a smartphone has disappeared because there is no innovation that's happening in the smartphone space. Your take on this? Do you feel that this is something that that you find to be true as well?
Yeah. Before I come to that, I just thought you may want to tell our viewers and listeners about the award that we won.
Oh, yes, of course. Any excuse to tell our listeners about the
little
award
pat on our back, as they say.
Yes, very happily enough, because just for public knowledge, our producer Deepthi has deserted us for the time being, because and as a result, there are no pats on our backs for now. But we are happy to say that TechCetera, hosted by myself and Leslie, has won the gold award at the E4M Golden Mics 2024. Yay!
Yay, man. And also, we must thank our listeners, you know, for being a very, it's thanks to the listeners, because we have an audience, that's why we have the podcast. So, pat on the back to the listeners also.
Absolutely.
So,
thank you.
Coming
so
back,
much.
Of course, to the smartphone stuff that you were asking me. Yeah, I mean, yes. I would subscribe to that view, because in a sense, what exactly is the wow factor? What are you going to be amazed with? What are the kind of new features that you really want to go? And, you know, it's not going to be an experience center for you. So if you're using it with a VR headset or with augmented reality or something, then at least you have something to, you know, to experience. Now, here you have a smartphone. The functions are more or less set over a period of time. I mean, how much more innovation can you do about it other than saying that, okay, this is a Gen AI smartphone or something like that? But even then, there's nothing to experience. It is just that, okay, fine, it is there. People have accepted it and they're moving on with life. So it has become another commodity. You would have bought a pressure cooker and today you would have bought a smartphone. I think they would come in probably in the same category. I know.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think, and that is what a lot of the retailers have been saying, that you know, one of the biggest problems is that brands are now trying to push for more expensive devices and all of that, stating that, oh, you have AI, you have 5 cameras, 200 megapixel cameras, but users are no longer finding it interesting. Finally, I would say, because, you know, the concept of a 200 megapixel camera versus, you know, the classic old interchangeable lens SLRs, they'll never really sort of truly rival, so to speak. I mean, of course, smartphone cameras have evolved significantly, but when it comes to that professionals, there would be competitions for iPhone videography and all of that. But it's,
yeah, I'm still not convinced that if you're really doing a very high-end kind of the photography, you would probably use a digital camera. You'd still use a Canon, or you'll still use a, I don't know. In the old days, I used to use Yashica, the FX3. Then I moved to the Canon D60. So, and I'm still, because I would still require the telephoto lens. I would still require the stuff. I mean, I'm not too convinced.
Right.
Yes, for convenience, I would use the iPhone or the, the Galaxy S24, whatever. I've always had this debate with my wife, but I find the Android camera is high-end. Android camera is much better than even the iPhone. I know it's a debatable point. Something that many people will...
poked the bear.
Yes, but it's okay. I mean, my wife also sort of subscribes to that point of view. She said, your photos, the photos that you take are much brighter. And all that. I said, it's okay. Let's leave that. It's a preference at the end of the day. But I would still take my digital camera for the very serious kind of photography. I need my telephoto lens. I need my other kind of wide angle lens. I need all those things. So I don't know how many of those things can you actually build? And at the end of the day, if you're a serious photographer, you may really want all those kind of... lens, etc.
Definitely. But this particular problem, Leslie, this innovation problem has created a bit of an issue, because the India smartphone market, the overall industry of smartphones, generates a revenue of close to $40 billion every year. And $40 billion is a pretty significant sum of money. And I think that's over 90,000 crore, or we'll have to get the calculations right. But a pretty massive amount of money is linked to this particular industry. And so far, brands were saying that, buyers aren't buying the affordable devices, but they're buying the more high-end devices. So even if you sell fewer devices, you're still selling more expensive devices, and at least the value growth was there in the market. But right now, given the sort of near complete stagnation of innovation, I think we are at that point where there's a risk of the entire market starting to decline, which in turn could affect multiple linked industries. It could affect the entire retail industry, even manufacturing efforts to sort of sell in India. All of this could be affected.
The sale of electronics itself is about 60% of the entire online shopping, if I'm not mistaken.
Right, absolutely. And even in India's export economy, more than 50% is contributed to by smartphones. So where do we go from here? What is the answer? Because do you feel that smartphones, we've kind of hit a certain ceiling when it comes to how innovative we can be with our products?
Yeah, so if you look at the numbers in India, we have what, something like 680 to 700 million, going by whichever figures you want.
750 million, yes.
You take 700 or you take 750 million, really it's not going to make too much of a difference. And look at the 1.4 billion population. But when you're looking at a 1.4 billion population, you also look at the affordability factor. So how many people can actually afford that? And out of that 700 million also, I am sure that a lot of people have two or three smartphones, So I don't know what the exact figure would be. My guess would be it is safely to assume that India would have about 500 to 550 million kind of individual users. That's my sense. I'm don't hold me by these numbers.
Right.
I mean, it's better to ask IDC or Counterpoint or Gartner.
They have
figures. But then there are the whole refurbished market, which we have covered over a period of time. That's another thing. But for the smartphone thing, well, if you speak about saturation point, you really do not know how much more can it really go. People will just keep on, say that the lifespan of any smartphone as of today, you would safely assume that you are using it for 2 or 3 years, right?
Right.
Because of the software, the bloatware, the different kind
Absolutely.
Of functions. So conveniently, most of the people would, on average, I think Indians would use it for about 2-3 years. Globally, of course, right. I think US and Canada, they discard it a little earlier because they get those free upgrades.
The financing schemes, right?
Yeah, the financing schemes, etc. So it's a very different kind of model, which is not practiced in India. So yeah.
I think also there's one entire factor that, you know, even if we are to find smartphones boring, the next generation of devices, which people say would be spatial computing, where you would just wear something
that's simple glasses.
I think still probably more than a decade away into the future.
Yeah, I mean, you remember last week we did discuss, because I've written that primer also on it. It's not easy, you know, because you have to build an ecosystem around it. It's not just about having. Like you look at the smartphone, it has a whole ecosystem.
Right.
You can't things on a smartphone. You can't do all those kind of things on other devices. You have to build those. And then it has to be commercially viable. Today, smartphones are selling because there's a whole ad. You yourself put out the numbers right now. So I think these will be cycles. There will be times. But yeah, have we reached a saturation point? That is something... we will have to think about. I do not know how much more room is there for the market to grow.
Speaking of markets and growing markets and consumer markets when it comes to technology, Leslie, last week we saw Reliance Jio increase its tariff by somewhere up to 27% across many of its plans. And then Airtel and Vodafone, of course, followed suit. So this industry is pretty much standardized. If one operator does something, the others also do pretty much the same. But now, and it's going to come of effect anytime by tomorrow, between tomorrow and day after. So between 3rd and 4th of July, the new tariffs are going to come of effect. And the new tariffs for both prepaid and postpaid.
I think they're trying to match it with the billing cycles of most people.
Yes. So between both prepaid and postpaid users, the general tariff of our data and connectivity plans is going to increase between 10 to 27%, which is pretty sizable because 27% is not exactly very small. And analysts have put out notes stating that this could lead to incremental revenues of nearly 47,000 crore for these telecom operators. But most people are of the opinion that the average household expenditure is not going to be impacted significantly for the average Indian citizen because of this.
I can't understand where that figure comes from because I'm sure they have done their math well. But, you know, there are two or three things that happened. One, it is a slightly elastic demand from a point of view of the plans. I can always downgrade to a different plan.
Right. I was just going to probably come to that next.
That may actually reduce the revenue of the telcos instead of... you know, increasing it. So I'm not too sure whether everybody is going to go for the upgrade. Maybe, I think the way the calculation has been done at this point in time, happy to be corrected on that, is that basically the high-end guys don't have much room for maneuvering around them. So they would have to pay those prices because they would be requiring that kind of data.
So right. So
that would be the calculation because, see, at the end of the day, everything is about the 80-20 Pareto principle, where 20% of the users actually are the guys who really, you know, are the head
of the revenue.
It's always the case. So probably in that case, but I think for most people around, I'm willing to stick my neck out a bit and say that, okay, many guys might think about, you know, moving back to prepaid. So,
probably. Yes, and in fact, the fun bit that has come out of this entire conversation is that a lot of people have started saying that, okay, are we slowly inching back to, you know, remember the time when if we would consume too much data, our bill would be 2,000 rupees, 3,000 rupees per month. This is before Reliance Jio entered in 2016. So, And with Jio entering, you know, voice calls became free and the cost of data became, I think, less than 10 rupees per gigabyte or something. So ridiculously affordable, everything. And now the telcos are pushing the cost up, saying that we are not earning enough to be able to invest in new technologies. So are we kind of slowly, gradually tracing back to a higher pricing? And could this also make space for new telecom operators to enter? Remember once upon a time in 2015,
I'm not too sure. But at least from the rate point of view, see, I mean, I know that I have said that, you know, that shift to prepaid could happen because you get a significant amount of data as of now. Now, if telcos decide to shift that balance, then there could be a slight change. So we'll have to wait to see the new tariffs, how they plan and what kind of packages are being built around those new tariffs. That's one part of it.
Right.
Because see, at the end of the day, the data consumption is pretty high of an average individual.
Yes.
Because we are watching Netflix on it, we are watching Amazon Prime, we are watching Hotstar, we are watching Disney, we are watching who knows what not. So a lot of OTT platforms, then a lot of, I mean, because the textual consumption as such is not much, but the video consumption is there, is where you actually hog the data. So typically, you may have, I don't know, I've not looked at the latest figures, but you just look at your own consumption on average every day, whether it is, you know, 2 GB per day or something, you will simply require a package of about 75 GB. So where you are consuming 75 GB, can you, with at the same price point, move to a 60 GB package? Now, that depends on whether Cisco is offering you that or not. So I think those combinations and combinations will have to, you know, be seen. We'll have to see. But I do sense that there will, this being a slightly elastic demand, people may feel that, okay, fine, you know, as it is also, remember, there's another thing that probably analysts may need to look at is this whole digital detox movement. A lot of people are trying to, you know, digitally detox themselves from the smartphones. So a lot of unwarranted consumption, you know, they might say, okay, fine, do I need that much?
Right. I still feel that's still a very urban sort of a phenomenon. And
yeah, but where does your money come from? So where's your money coming from?
not probably the bulk volumes, but yes, of course, there is also the other conversation that the number of users who holds, you know, double and triple SIM cards, and that will probably go down because people wouldn't want to.
I think our colleague Gulbin today wrote, no, the SIM consolidation factor.
Right.
So you will
that
have
is
it.
Something that is going to eventually play out. Very interesting to see how the telecom industry will change, because I remembered in 2015, we had at least around 15 or 12 private telecom operators. And from there, we've come to just three. So the world has changed quite a bit in the past 9 years.
But if you look, the world over also, you just have three or four operators and then they sublet it.
True.
They sublet to the other operators.
True.
So
true.
Really, the entire data or the cable, the fiber optics, etc., are held by two or three. So they, you always have the two or three operators.
Right. Absolutely. From this entire debacle of telecom, I'd want to sort of divert our listeners' attention to something that's a little more interesting. Leslie, you wrote a fascinating primer today, and by today, that's the 2nd of July. For all readers listening to us, you might want to grab a copy of Mint or from the 2nd July edition to read it, which speaks about dead bots. These are, of course, not bots that have just been killed or something, but these are bots that represent individuals who have passed away. And Leslie begins his storytelling by giving the example of, not really sure how to pronounce his name, Tang Xiaowu would probably be a right estimate, who used an AI bot to deliver a live speech 4 months after his death. Leslie, would you want to sort of talk about this and the question that you posed in the primer, what is the problem with this?
Yeah, I mean, the point is, if you have watched that movie Coco, you know, that
Right. It was, yeah. I loved it. Absolutely.
It was a lovely movie, a very heartwarming movie.
Yes.
Something that even my wife and I were discussing over a period of time. This is how movies should be made. It shows that it's a certain emotional subject. Now,
right.
Here, the folks who are trying, you know, to create these, they go by different names, whether you call them dead bots, whether you call them grief bots, whether you call them post-mortem bots, or whether you call them...
You could call them bots.
Yeah, I mean, they go by different names. Now,
right.
I think, like Shakespeare, we can easily say what's in the name, because at the end of the day, you are creating, you're building a bot so that the bot is of a person, whether it could be your grandparent, it could be your grandfather, your grandmother, it could be your uncle, your aunt, your niece, or even your parents for that matter. And you create a kind of an emotional bond with them so that because over a period of time, the dead bot is fed with all the recordings. That is provided you have a digital, repertoire of your
right. parents. Voice and videos and...
Yeah, but they are presuming in many of these cases that they would be having all those recordings. In most cases, right. in India, I don't think many of us, but we have done it on CDs and all, if you remember, during weddings and all that.
Yeah, absolutely. So
you would be having those recordings in some digital format or the other, whether it's in a USB stick or whether it's a CD format. I don't know whether Gen Z even remember that there's something called a floppy disk and a CD and a USB stick. But that apart.
We will ask our resident Gen Z producer after the show as to whether she's ever seen a floppy disk.
Yeah, so she has messaged us, we do.
Yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, so with all those kind of recordings, you are basically using AI to, you know, sort of learn the manner, the behaviors, the mannerism, etc. And this deadbot is a kind of simulation of your grandparent or your relative, your whoever the relative, your uncle, aunt, whatever it be. And they speak to you and you give you comfort. So you would say that the dead bot is alive for you. The grief bot is providing comfort. You know, so that's the kind of basic idea. I think prima facie, if you look at it, there's nothing really wrong with it. It's a nice way of recreating memories. Like just as, you know, I always give that example that in the past, whenever we remembered our parents or remembered our grandparents or remembered any of our friends and all, we used to look into our photo albums and, you know, look at them and, you know, probably in many cases, it would bring a smile to your face or it would just... you know, jig up some memory of them, you know, being kind to you or being nice to you or whatever it be,
right.
making such a major difference in your life. Now, the ethical side and the kind of concerning side is, I think, they are the AI researchers who have, you know, time and again brought up this point that it could be an emotional drain because many of these... dead bots when they're built, if one is, of course, do you have the consent of the person? In most cases, like say in a country like India, I doubt anybody would have taken the consent of anybody before.
Yeah, absolutely.
But even in places like in developed countries, like whether it's North America or Europe, etc., even with consent, the person in their lifetime who would have created this kind of digital avatar of theirs, you know, so that they could talk to their children. You remember Superman?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so the father speaks to the son and gives him instructions.
Right.
So that's the way you could compare it to that, where your grandparent comes and, you know, tells you you're stuck and you're learning how to make some curry dish. So your grandmother comes and tells you, okay, this is how to, you know, this is how you can make it. Add some elaichi, add some adrak, add some pepper, add some whatever,
yes.
you know, cloves.
Grandmother's
that special
Sunday,
recipe to make
recipe.
Cookies. Or to make biscuits, or to make whatever it will be. Now, it's a very appealing thought, but just look at it. if it's done without consent in the first place, and even if it's done with consent, you would have, that person would have signed a long-term service contract with the person. So the person who has built that, the company that has built this dead bot or the grief bot could continuously spam you with a lot of messages.
They could use it.
And the dead bot could be used, you know, it's an emotional drain also, because then when do you start moving on? Now, currently in life,
exactly,
we move on. That's a human kind of trait. So there are these psychological questions, there are these ethical questions of whether if it's done without consent, then how did you do it? Because Robin Williams' daughter, Zelda Williams, she expressed a lot of distress when she saw the videos of her late father doing the rounds. And Robin Williams is such a big public figure. So just think of it. I sometimes just think about the fact that, you know, you watch old movies. How would the sons and daughters of them, you know, when they're looking at those movies, when you're seeing actually this person is almost alive in the movie, that's how you relate to a movie. What would be going on? Where you're continuously seeing that figure and you're reminded that the person is around. So I think it's a different way of coping. Mechanisms have to be done. And the ethics of it, of course, whether we should be building these kind of dead bots, grief bots.
Right. I feel there's a little bit of a Harry Potter. Harry Potter had this particular thing called the Resurrection Stone, where you would use that stone to temporarily revive a person of your choice from the dead. But even in that, I remember the big narrative that came up in that was that there's a bit of a dissonance here in bringing back somebody from the dead, because A, you'd never be able to move on, and B, the conversation that you're having is not really a conversation with the person, because, I mean, you're interacting with
capture the full essence
of the idea.
Like,
very fascinating.
Shovik is so many things other than, you know, just an image that we are seeing on the screen.
It is
so much more than what you are seeing on the screen as a digital avatar. Even when we are doing video, when you are doing videos, for instance. So we are so much more. The human being is so much more than that. That's why sometimes I think they have so many negative connotations, like a ghost bot. Now, ghost is...
I was actually just going to ask you, do you feel like this is going to... This could probably lead to more harm than good? I don't know if harm is the right word, but...
See, that's why I said it's a tricky area. It depends on how you look at it. Now, for instance, as I said, that if you're the sons of celebrities, even when the celebrity dies, if they're in the... Like, it's a huge movie star. The movie star lives forever, almost, at least for that century. How would you feel? Because every... I mean, it depends on the popularity of that. Now, who has not heard of Robin Williams? Now, when you're watching a Robin Williams movie, I do not know what goes on in the mind of Zelda Williams. How does she feel? She may be feeling good in certain cases where the films are being shown. But in certain things, if you're manipulating and using a deep fake of Robin Williams, obviously, it's going to be very distressing. Or you're making, you know, a mockery of the entire thing. I don't think it's going to be fine for many.
Right. Absolutely. And on that very thought-provoking note, it's probably time to wrap up for this week. Before we go, we'd like to just touch upon a similarly dystopic situation up in the International Space Station, where Sunita Williams, who was the third Indian origin individual after Kalpana Chawla and before her, Rakesh Sharma, to ever fly to space. She seems to be stranded in space. I mean, it's of course a loosely used word. The cause of she being stranded at the space station is because of a fault with the Boeing Starliner. And there's, of course, efforts being made to get her back to Earth. But just the idea of being stuck in space is... no less dissonant or dystopic than the idea of having a bot which speaks to you even after the person in question has passed away.
I wouldn't use a strong word like dystopian for this particular thing. Yes, it is unnerving, definitely.
Right.
You have to be mentally very, very strong to be stuck in those kind of situations. I mean, I get claustrophobic even if I'm stranded in a lift for a few seconds.
Right.
I can imagine, you know, I can't even imagine myself on the International Space Station being stranded and not knowing when I'm going to, you know, get back to Earth. But then we had this discussion earlier also, they are trained to be mentally strong. They are trained for such situations. But as I said, nothing really trains you for the inevitable. So we wish Suniti Williams all the best. Our wishes are with her. And we hope that she comes back soon and that our cricket team also comes back soon. After have they come back?
Oh, yes. I don't know, actually.
I hope I, because Beryl Hurricane has kept a cricket team that has won the world.
I don't think it's an entirely bad idea to be stuck at Barbados, you know, like it's a nice place.
We shall reserve our opinions on that. Before we wind up, I think you would like to tell our listeners about the Global AI Summit and then.
Yes, and that is something we'll speak at length about in our next episode. But yes, the Ministry of Electronics and IT in continuation of the Global Partnership on AI Summit last year and India's leadership of G20 last year is organizing a Global India AI Summit this week, which will run on July 3rd and 4th and is expected to highlight India's achievements in the realm of AI. We'll speak more about that in our next episode, but until then, stay safe. Do let us know what you felt about this episode.
So folks, that's it for this episode. You are listening to Mint Tech Cetera.
You can reach out to us on LinkedIn if you have any questions. Our handles are in the description.
This episode was produced by me, Deepthi Ahuja. It was edited by Amrinder Singh. Catch you next week.
To stay updated on this podcast, follow us at HD Smartcast on all the major social media platforms. To listen to more such podcasts, log on to www.hdsmartcast.com.